Everybody with Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh is often referred to as a Yom Tov for women, a day that women traditionally refrain from doing certain melachos. One of the reasons brought down that we say Mivarech HaChodesh is so that women should know what day Rosh Chodesh is going to be. It's also a day that we've had rain, and I was just looking for it and I can't find it right now, but there's a halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch that when the first rain of the season comes down, there's a bracha to say. But once it comes down and it starts, a certain amount of rain that comes down talks about it. Well, I don't speak right now.
Cannot hear you clearly.
Start.
At all now.
Well, is it better now? Yeah, it's in Simrei Chafal, if I found it. It says in halacha that if it's been dry for a long season, then the first rains, there's a bracha to make. Thank you for a bracha, even if the rains weren't sufficient to break the problem, but the first rains that come. So whether we're going to make the bracha today or not, then it's considered sufficiently dry in the last few days, but for sure we see that rain is a bracha, rain especially in Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully this will be a beginning of lots of bracha that we're going to have this month of Kislev, the month of Hanukkah, of Savior, which will bring an end to all the tzaras that we have in Klal Yisrael. Before we start today's topic of Motzah Machmas Gufay, there were just a couple of prosim that I didn't manage to get in at the end of last week, still on the subject of Machmas Chesun Kis, something which is set aside for a singular use, and you're not going to use it for anything else, in particular because of its sensitivity, it's delicate, it's expensive, or whatever the case may be. We said that that becomes Muktzah Machmas Chesun Kis, and therefore it is more Muktzah, if you can say such a thing, it is a more stringent Muktzah than Kli Shemelachta L'Issa, which we allowed you to move Toko from a Koimoi, whereas Machmas Chesun Kis you cannot move at all, unless you have the Heterion that you can move Muktzah, which we'll discuss at a later stage. So what I wanted to add was the definition. We spoke last week of the definition of a Muktzah Machmas Chesun Kis, but that definition can change according to a person's will. If you want something to be different, you designate it for a different use, then your designation, even if it is just a mental designation and you don't say anything verbally, that suffices to change its use. So if you have an expensive item that you no longer need or something like that, and you now don't mind using it as a paperweight, and you have mentally considered it that way, then that leaves its status as long as it's happened before Shabbos. On Shabbos, obviously, you can't change its status, especially since we hold Nigudis Katzolish, the Benash Moshes, is Katzoli Gula Yoima, something which was Mukta when Shabbos came in, even if there was a change of status during the day, remains Mukta for the whole of Shabbos. But if it was done beforehand, if it was before Shabbos, a person had in mind to change the status of something, then that would be fine to change it and consider it as no longer Muktzah. And the opposite also applies. And that is, if you have something which is not Muktzah, for example, you bought an item of clothing is not Muktzah. But then came Friday, before Shabbos obviously, and you decided, this item of clothing I don't want to keep, I want to return it. So from this moment on, you are makbid not to wear it, because if you wear it, then they will not take it back in the store. And therefore, you're careful not to wear it, you're careful not to dirty it, not to do anything with it, you're not going to use it for any other purpose. And therefore, when you have such an item, the moment you decide to return it to the store, it becomes Muktzah Machmas Chesun Kis. So you would have a case of an item of clothing, which generally is not Muktzah at all, if you've decided something about it, like returning to the store, then Hapuch can actually make it into Muktzah Machmas Chesun Kis through a thought of wanting to give it back. And so to such an item which were to break or rip or tear or get ruined, so when it was whole and fixed, it was considered as Muktzah Machmas Chesun Kis. And now that it's broken, it has no use anymore. You have a very expensive camera, and now it's broken. So you don't mind giving it to your kids to play with, or using it as a paperweight, or whatever other purpose you might have for it. So then, unless you've decided to discard it and throw it in the garbage, that could also be a problem that you've now made it Muktzah by discarding it. But if you haven't discarded it, you just allowed it for multiple other uses, so that it also would take it out from its category of muktzah machas specimen kiss, as long as this happened before Shabbos, not if it happened on Shabbos. So that was just a couple of details that I wanted to bring in from last week, and now this week we can start. The third category that we spoke about, legabe muktzah, is muktzah machmas gufoy, literally translated as a result of itself. It is not a utensil, it is not something that you've set aside for a particular use, and therefore it in of itself is something that muktzah, we're going to define it as follows. Something which is not a utensil, it's not food, or it's food that cannot be eaten, not by man, not by animal. We'll see examples of how something can be food but not be eaten, for example, if it's ossuary, or it's food that lost its edibility because it's gone bad. So something which is not a utensil, it's not a food, or a food that cannot be eaten, gets a din of muktzah machmas gufoy. It essentially is something that is muktzah, and a typical example of this is sticks and stones and sand and all the items that we have outside in our yard that are not considered as utensils, and we're not going to eat them. Those are typical examples of muktzah machmas gufoy, or as some refer to it as muktzah delei chazi lemidi, muktzah which is not fit for any other use, for any use. An example of such a thing, not apart from stones, sticks and stones, would be peels, pits, and bones of the type which are not edible. There are such things which are edible. We'll deal with them separately, but you have a peel of a fruit or a vegetable which is not edible, not even edible by animals, or the pit, especially when you have the very hard ones, or bones. Then bones, actually, we can divide them into two categories. There are bones that are edible by, well, actually, more than two. There are bones that are edible by people, there are bones that are edible by animals, and there are bones that are not edible by animals. Bones that are edible by people, we'll see a discussion that they're considered as non-muktzah. Bones that are edible by animals are also non-muktzah only if the animals that eat such bones are present in our neighborhood, and therefore it's shaykh to give it to them. And bones that are not eaten even by animals, then obviously they're considered as muktzah. Right, so we just mentioned that the bones that are edible by animals needs to be edible by animals that are available. In fact, it's interesting. Many years ago, I visited, together with my family, an ostrich farm. And one of the facts they told us about ostriches is that to help the digestion, ostriches need to eat sticks and stones and various bones and things like that. And it's not because they digest them, but it helps in the digestive system to break down the food, and then later it gets released from the body in almost complete form, but it's usually quite worn down because it has been rubbed against other pieces on the inside. And they showed us, interesting, a spark plug from a internal combustion engine, a petrol engine, that had been swallowed by an ostrich and came out about half the size and all smooth on all the sides. So ostriches need such items in order to small round items to swallow in order to help them with the digestion. They eat this. Could be if you have such stones available or you had such bones that they might eat, perhaps you could say that there would not be muktzah if you had an ostrich in your backyard, which for those who do not live in Otsuan in South Africa, I would say is very rare. And therefore, having such a item which is ra'u for an ostrich is not going to get you very far, at least to say that it's not muktzah. But give you an interesting example of something which you wouldn't have thought has a use for an ostrich. An ostrich farmer would perhaps consider that. It would have been interesting, Charlie, because the ostrich finds it himself. He doesn't put it in the food. That would be an interesting question. So, these things are considered muktzah if they are not edible. When eating such items, the typical example, someone is eating garinim, sunflower seeds that come in the shell. The shell of the seed is not edible. Even the parrots don't eat the shell and they drop it. So what should one do? One may remove it from your mouth. When you pick up the garinim to eat them, so the food is inside, so the shell is now wrapping around food. It's tougher to the food and therefore it is not muktzah at that moment. So too, when you pick up a fruit that has a peel, that's not going to, a banana, you're not going to eat the banana peel. but there's no mukta in the banana peel when the banana is still there. But when you've finished removing the fruit from the peel and you're left with the peel, so you don't have to drop it immediately. You can remove the shell from your mouth or wherever you're holding it. So if you put the gari nib in your mouth in order to crack it open and then you've got the shell in your hand, you can take it out of your mouth. But one shouldn't hold on to it for an extra long amount of time. And what Novid brings down, that the habit that people have, they eat gari nib and they eject the shell and they put it in their hand and they collect them and eventually they have a whole handful and then they get up and they throw it in the garbage. He said, that's wrong. Rather, as you eat the gari nib one by one, you should drop them into a plate. When you're finished, so then the plate is in front of you, either you have a heta of grasha rei, or you do tilta minatad, you need the plate, and therefore you pick up the plate, you don't pick up the gari nib, and you can carry it on top of the plate in order to get rid of it. We will discuss that later on the exceptions of how to move mukta. One of the discussions is tilta minatad, when you move something not directly, but using another item. So if you have peels, pits, and bones that are not edible, and now after you've eaten, they are lying on your table, you can remove them by tiltul min hatzad. That's why after you've had a melon and you left with a peel, you've got a grapefruit and you left with the shell of the grapefruit, whatever it is, you carry it out to the kitchen with the plate that it's on. Although we'll still see there could be a slight difference over there depending on how well cleaned out it is. So again, these items that are not edible, peels, shells, bits, etc., that you have in your hand, you may remove them from your mouth if that's the way to eat them, but preferably you should put them down right away. No need to make yourself nervous about it, but put it down. You should put down right away and not hold them in your hand, and then later you'll move them away from a different halacha. If there is a little bit of food left attached to the item that we're dealing with, whether it be a bone that still has a little bit of meat on it, or flesh, or whether it's a pit of a fruit, you've eaten a plum very often there's some flesh that's still attached to the inner pit, or something like that. I mean, the apricot ones we know come out nice and clean, but the peaches, nectarines, and plums are slightly different. So each one in its own case, you've got a little bit of flesh that is still attached. So even though you have no interest in eating that bit of food off, because to you this is considered finished, and you're not going to suck on it and clean it and get the very last fiber off that bit, nevertheless, it is considered food. And so long as there's food attached to such an item, it is not considered mukta. Therefore, if you do have bones and there's something edible still attached to that bone, even if you're not going to suck it off, it is not considered mukta. If the food that's left behind, or anyway, any food for that matter that has gone off, and that food that's left behind is not ro'u la'achila, whether it's because of what it is or because it's gone bad or something like that, and it's not even ro'u for animals, then it would be considered as mukta. Now, you have peels and bits and bones that, as we mentioned, there's a possibility that they would be edible. Whether it's edible to people, like some people use orange peels and they make a delicacy out of it. Some people use pumpkin seeds and make gari nib out of it. Or you have a soft bone that has a chewable part to it. Or there is, even if it's a question of something inside it, but on it, you have marrow inside the bone, which is edible. Even though marrow apparently is not very healthy, it is very high in fats, but it is edible. It is edible to humans. So even though the humans that we mix with generally don't go take the bones and cut them open and suck out the marrow, but it is an edible part of the food, and therefore the bone or the seed or the peel that we just dealt with do not become mukta, and they're still mukta to move them about. Or even if it's not edible for people, but it's edible for animals, if those animals are in the vicinity, then again, they would consider it not to be mukta. An interesting discussion. I didn't see him bring it in, but seen in the past, a discussion of dogs. Dogs generally are considered as animals that are around. But what happens if you have a really conservative-minded neighborhood where dogs are totally balira balimotsi, you don't see them at all? Would you say that anything that's edible by a dog would be considered mukta? Very possibly, yes. here in Ramat Beit Shemesh Aleph, we do see doves. I hear them on my street regularly. But I'm sure there are parts of the city, whether it would be in the Kiryah or Ramah Beis or something like that, where there are no doves. Could be that the halakha would be different for an edible bone in Ramah Aleph and would be in Ramah Beis. Very possible. If you have this type of food that is a peel or a pit or a bone, which is possible to be eaten by people. Not everybody eats it, but it's possible to be eaten. A chicken bone that's well cooked or something like that. Or an orange peel, we said a watermelon pit. Then, it would make a difference whether a person discarded it before Shabbos. Discarding it on Shabbos can't change its status if a bone had all the meat removed from it on Shabbos and the bone becomes mutz. But just because you discarded it, which is taller on your da'as, on what you think about it, that you are mentally discarding, I'm not going to eat it, that we say the mental decisions has to be done before Shabbos in order to change the status of something and not on Shabbos. Therefore, if you have such a bone, which is slightly edible or has a little bit of something left on it, but you have already discarded it, you've thrown it out, at that moment, it is considered no longer edible, and we would say that on Shabbos was a muktzah. As I said, you can smooth out Erev Shabbos. If you have good food, regular good food, a piece of cake that ended up being thrown out for whatever reason, could be even if you have, say, food that someone bit into and you don't want to eat it anymore, but to mice it's good food. So a lot of possum hold that even good food that's thrown into the garbage does not become muktzah. Not that we're going to be pulling food out of our garbage, but has other nafkaminas also, so it's good to keep it in mind. One of the nafkaminas would be that if your garbage has this inside it, your garbage is not a muktzah. The bag that holds the garbage is not a basis, but it's holding non-muktzah items inside it. Some say that once you throw it into the garbage, it becomes mollus. It's disgusting. At that moment, even though it was good food, good status, but since you've thrown it into a mokum mollus, so then it's considered as disgusting for a person to eat, and it loses its status of food at that moment, and therefore it would become it. So there's a machlokes about that. If you have raw food that cannot be eaten in its raw state, it needs preparation, whether that be cooking or baking or whatever the preparation may be. But the way that it is now, it is inedible. We consider that to be mukta. The poskim discussed meat. That meat is chazi l'umta. There were times that people sucked on raw meat. And therefore, could be that raw meat would not be mukta. Lamaisa, first of all, we don't do that. And second of all, but not all meat is considered as chazi l'umta, only certain soft meats. Therefore, generally speaking, we consider raw meat to be mukta. Now, raw does, as I said, doesn't have to be that it's lacking cooking. It's lacking a procedure in order to prepare it to make it edible. So if you have something like beef jerky or biltong, or even smoked meat, which might not go through a cooking process, but purely a smoking process, that is irrelevant of what process you use in order to make it edible. The fact is that right now it's inedible. It lacks a process in order to prepare it, and that process we're not going to be doing on Shabbos. And therefore, right now it is considered as muksa, which is a point to take into account quite seriously, because our freezers are full of food that is unprepared and not edible in its unprepared state, and therefore our freezers are full of mukta items, and you're keeping your best part of your Shabbos meal, the ice cream, in your freezer. One should pay attention that the ice cream should not be underneath the piece of meat, but rather it should be on top of the piece of meat, because you're going to have trouble getting that ice cream out of the freezer. We'll discuss, hopefully next week, maybe the week after, soon, next coming up soon, the idea of a bosses, depending on what your intention is. But so, probably your ice cream does not become a bosses when you leave your meat on it. We'll see the criteria for that when we get to the next year. But nevertheless, taking it out is going to be complicated because you can't move the meat. So you're going to have to pull it out. You have to be careful. And then you're going to fall. Can you pick it up on the floor? We'll discuss that in the future. But it's something to take in mind that we pass them that raw food that needs to be processed and it hasn't yet been processed is considered mukta.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So in a freezer that you have to pull the drawer out, you're removing the raw meat and the ice cream. And even if you put the ice cream on top of the chicken, once you've opened the drawer and you've taken out the ice cream, then what's left in the drawer for you to push back is only mukta things. The question is, firstly, if you're allowed to open the drawer,
so essentially, if you can avoid it and prepare before Shabbos, the ice cream should be in a place where you won't have that problem. For sure, my tov, my noinda would be better. But now this is your situation. What do you want to do? So the drawer that the ice cream in doesn't become a bosses because it's a bosses of davar ha'asa, the davar ha'mutza together. They're both mukza and non-mukza items inside, and therefore the drawer itself doesn't become a bosses. There is the problem that when you open and close the drawer, you move in mukta. So true, it's not moving directly, it's moving through some minatad. So there has to be the purpose of what you're doing it for. Generally speaking, what we call a multi-purpose drawer. You have a drawer in your kitchen where you keep many, many items. So we'll say that that drawer is not mukta because there's a lot of mixture of things inside it and therefore you can open and close it. It's not the lechatchila place to keep things on Shabbos, but if that's where it is, you can open it and close it on Shabbos. There is, when you have a drawer that is attached to a larger item and it is attached, you can't remove it, then it is bottled to the larger item. You have such a thing if you have mukta in a pocket. If the pocket is a separate item, it's not part of the clothing. For example, a shirt pocket, a pocket that I have in my shirt, is just a patch of cloth over the shirt, and the item that sits in my pocket sits halfway between the shirt and the patch. That is considered a pocket that's part of the clothing. But a pocket that you would have in a pair of pants or in a skirt, for example, or in a coat, is usually a separate sachet that is sewn into the edge of your clothing. We consider that to be a separate item. But since it's attached to the pants, it's bottled to the pants. So a man who were, or a woman, is going to find something in their pocket on Shabbos. You're wearing your skirt or shirt and you find money in that pocket. The item doesn't become mukta because the pants is not a bosses to the money. The pocket is a bosses to the money. But the pocket is bottled to the pants. Therefore, you can't wear the pants while the money's still in the pocket because you're walking around with money in your pocket and you're moving the money. So you have to get rid of the money, you turn the pocket inside out, you let the money fall on the floor. But it doesn't become mukta. The same discussion is given if you have a drawer that is not removable, so then the drawer becomes tafel, bottled to the bigger item as part of the whole cupboard or something like that. So if you have that type of drawer that is connected to your freezer, so it will be bottled to the freezer, and therefore, even if there's mukta inside, the freezer doesn't become a bosses to it because the freezer is only holding the drawer. And the drawer becomes a bosses, but the drawer is tafel to the freezer. And therefore, it could be that it would be, it's not mukta at all. Although, that I think in general, most of our drawers are removable and therefore that heter wouldn't be available. A couple of other items on this subject would be something which is osur ba'achila and osur ba'hana, has both. One may not eat it, one may not derive benefit from such an item. Then we would say that that's considered mukta because there's nothing you can do with it. You can't eat it, even though it actually is food that's edible. But halachically it's also to eat, and halachically it's also to give to someone to eat, whether that be a goy or an animal. Then that will be considered as mukta. An example would be chametz and Pesach. If you were to find or saw chametz and Pesach, you have to treat it as mukta. You can't eat it yourself. You can't give it to someone else to eat. You can't derive benefit from it. If you find mukta on Pesach, you should not pick it up. You should cover it and make sure that you don't see it. And then on Moitzi Yom Tov, don't have to wait Moitzi 7 days, Moitzi the first days, you will then remove it and burn it. If it's yours or whatever, if it's not yours, if it's Goy's, and you put it away and get rid of it, but you don't touch it at all on Yom Tov or Shabbos Chol HaMoed, whatever the case may be. Another example, something that is also ba'achila and also ba'hanah, that it's forbidden to eat and forbidden to get benefit out of, would be orda, produce that grows on a tree within the first 3 years of its growth. Kilai hakerem, when you have two wheat and grapes that were sown together, the product of those plants that grow in proximity in a way that's considered osubishim kilayim is osubarna, or if a person owns something and he made a neder that the benefit of these items should be also in the whole world, a person has the power of doing such a thing, you may create an isser on your own items, and an isser that applies to the whole world. If he does it only for one person or for himself, it's different, but if he does it for the whole world, then there's something that's, again, also to eat, also to have a norm. Those are cases of things that are totally mukta. But something which is edible, and it's also by no, but you're allowed to have hana from it, and therefore you're going to be giving it to a, before I get to that, something which is also by chila, it's mutter by hana, but you may not feed it to a goy, may not feed it to an animal. For example, truma and chana. Chala, once it's tame, is considered as also, but even truma tamea, the kohen can use it and light a candle with it. So he's not going to eat it, but he can use it. So such an item, you're not allowed to feed it to a goy, you're not allowed to give it to an animal. If you're not a kohen and you can't light it, or it's not oil, so it's something else that can't be used. So essentially, it doesn't have an issa hano intrinsically from the halacha, but it doesn't have any practical use. Because you're not allowed to give it to a goy, you're not allowed to give it to an animal, would also be considered as mukta, because it now has no purpose. A item that has an isser on it, but that isser will disappear when Shabbos is gone. For example, an egg that was laid on Shabbos. So it's mukta when it's laid, but after Shabbos becomes a regular egg. Milk that was milked on Shabbos, even if it was milked in a way that's permissible, like through a goy in certain circumstances or by an automated machine, nevertheless, that milk is considered mukta, even though essentially it can be eaten and can be traded. But it's something that's going to be mutter on Moitzer Shabbos. Therefore, we say that mukta has been set aside. It didn't exist as an isur noilad. Therefore, it is mukta. Another example of such an item would be oil that's left over from your candles. That after Shabbos, you can do what you like with it. But on Shabbos, any oil that's left over because your candle burnt out early would be mukta, or fruit or leaves that fell off a tree. After Shabbos, it's fine. But on Shabbos, we consider them as mukta. Couple more details, but we're running out of time, so we'll come back next week and hopefully finish off this chapter, and then we'll get on to the dealing of bosses. So I'm going to hold it here for today and wish everybody a good Chodesh, a good week, and a good day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much for Chodesh.
Have a good Chodesh.
Thank you.